The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
I'm prepared to do anything I can. Well, to do it then.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should it be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Football Show, Joe Malloy, Nathan Murphy with you. We will have Pat Nevin between 9 and 10. We're looking back on an electrifying FA Cup weekend. Fair to say. What was your pick?
You got there first. Yeah. So many. I think the highlight. And,
hard to choose. Well, if you had to pick one specifically.
I think it was the player from the team that Manchester City were playing against, Fulham, who actually looked like they were a League Two side. Uh-huh. I hadn't realised I was in London yesterday and found myself watching this game in the pub as I was waiting to get the train out to watch Kev dancing. And I presumed... skating, dancing, whatever he was doing. I presumed that Manchester City were playing a team from League Two because Fulham were just so bad. But Fulham had a player sent off after 7 minutes. That was the highlight. Little tug in the jersey, ruined the game. Ruined what was already an incredibly dull game. I missed the Liverpool match because of the skating slash dancing.
Sure.
And that was obviously the highlight of the weekend, it seems.
The dancing on ice, if you will.
Yes.
Something actually I mentioned to Pat Nevin, it is extraordinary how English football has changed. That even Fulham, a championship side going to Manchester City, when it's their kick out, are splitting the centre house, pushing the fullbacks on, and trying to pass out from their own end line, getting picked off, but refusing to compromise on this.
You think when, not when it first started, but probably when Brendan Rodgers brought it in with Swansea, and he was the one who came out and Swansea conceded one of those goals, just like Fulham conceded yesterday, and he went, listen, don't blame the players, blame me. I've told them no matter what happens, we do this. Mm. And it just does seem like insanity at times. You're playing Manchester City.
Yeah.
Managers might come out and Scott Parker may go, I want my players to express themselves, that I want people to see that this is what we're doing at Fulham. We're live on television. I want people to think that, you know, we have a nice style of football and we're not just going to turn up here and try and kick lumps out of them. That's not what I'm about. Mm. But you get beaten 4-0. That could have been 8-0 if Manchester City could have been bothered.
Yeah. It's almost a shop window for the manager to show on that type of manager, maybe.
And... again, you wonder about the leadership on the pitch. It's like Manchester United at Liverpool last week. Mm. That 10-minute spell after half-time where they're going with these short kick-outs and that somebody doesn't just go, which eventually happened, just bloody go long. Yeah. Just get rid of it. Just relieve a little bit of danger. And like, that was very similar yesterday. Like, Fulham just couldn't get out of their half. They didn't have the talent to get the ball out of their half. Mm. So why not try something different?
It did strike me watching it because City were on a full press and thought, the City players were looking at each other saying, well, I mean, we press much better teams than you lot and get the ball off you, so this is just a joy. There's one issue which has been the burning issue of the evening. We've been talking a lot about Kobe Bryant. We've been talking about Andy Farrell's first team selection tomorrow, which is a big deal. But Nathan, raw eggs have been dominating the text machine.
Do I smell a apology forthcoming, Joe?
I haven't looked through these texts yet.
So well, I'm just gonna read them blind. An apology should be forthcoming.
What happened
here is... read the text first and then you can make your mind up.
A mother texted in earlier on to say that her 15-year-old wanted to eat raw eggs, big into sport, in training, wants the protein and wants raw eggs. Don't know why exactly, maybe the 15-year-old watched Rocky and thought, that's for me. Mm. And the mother was throwing it out to us, ironically, as if we know. Oh, hang on.
Am I right there?
Am I okay?
You're right.
I'm back. Sorry, I dropped my mic. The mother was asking us, as sports people, is what she called us.
Yeah, well, of course.
Did we advocate raw eggs or not? And
we gave the appropriate advice you would expect from us sports people.
Well, I mean, our advice ultimately was, for God's sake, just cook the eggs. Why take a chance? Tell your 15-year-old to cop on.
Well, regardless of what we'll get into, the science seems to suggest you get more protein from the cooked egg.
That's what JP sent through, yeah. Now, you were under the impression that because...
factually correct.
Because you... you said there's raw eggs and cake.
Yes.
And we said, but you cook the cake before you eat them.
I said, not all cakes are cooked.
Yeah, that's where we left that. So somebody says, I think Nathan is talking about how your mom would let you lick the spoon.
Well, I was thinking about that as well.
He's basically agreeing to every suggestion now as vindication, so who knows, it's Conan Ringsend. You really did. Any text that came in, you seemed to suggest this was vindicating you, and not one of the texts did. I can't believe I'm spending 30 cents on this, says Eleanor and Tip. And she sent this in at 7:30. So she probably doesn't even know her text has been read out now. She's the killer.
Where did that money go?
The 30 cent?
Yeah.
Your wages, I'd say.
Great.
I don't know. I can't believe I'm spending 30 cents on this question. But is Nathan thinking of cookie dough often sold in cylinder form.
Oh, yeah.
And eaten raw in the States. I'm just giving Nathan an out, really.
Oh, thanks, yeah. Because it wasn't, I was also referring to that.
It was embarrassing when you were saying, but no, you whisk the raw egg up with everything. And again, you didn't understand that we were saying, but you cooked that.
No, no. I'm talking about tiramisu.
Lads, whiskey sour. This text, by the way, just to suspend any curiosity, ends with the word, you muppets.
Okay.
Whiskey sour. The hint is in the name. It's mixed with alcohol. The alcohol kills any bacteria in the raw eggs. Therefore, there is no risk of bacteria.
Right. I remember being in Peru many years ago and having a pisco sour, which is somewhat similar, but I think is a pisco is maybe the alcohol of choice in Peru. Mm. And being violently ill afterwards.
Right.
Which I'm presuming was the raw egg. So why didn't the alcohol kill? What the hell happened there?
Listeners wouldn't have heard it sound like the roof was collapsing for a moment. Yeah. Like some, like, it's like in a gym where someone drops a heavy, very heavy weight. Yes.
Oh, right, that one,
there you go. Lads, when raw eggs are mixed with sugar, the sugar creates a chemical reaction which cooks the eggs. Fair enough, I didn't know that. Chocolate mousse, finally, is, well, not finally, there's one or two more. Chocolate mousse is made with separated raw eggs. I don't know what the point of that text is.
Well, chocolate mousse isn't cooked.
Is it not cooked before it's cooled again?
No.
Definitely not?
100%.
You're not exactly the authority on this.
Well, neither are you.
I'm admitting to that.
Ah, chocolate mousse is just whipped and whipped and whipped and
Are you sure it's not cooked and then eaten cold?
Absolutely. Eggnog.
It wouldn't be the only dessert.
Eggnog.
Sorry, it wouldn't be the only dessert that was cooked and then eaten cold.
But have you got to tiramisu yet?
It's the next text. Raw eggs are used in tiramisu, says somebody. It's the cold, slimy, creamy filling that includes raw eggs. The sponge layers are baked, but the filling itself is never cooked. Therefore, it still does contain raw eggs when you're eating it. But I can understand the confusion. It says Barry. What a gentleman Barry is, by the way.
Barry, there was no confusion. I laid it out there. Tiramisu, a dessert, raw eggs, nobody ill.
I have...
Though, is there alcohol in tiramisu?
I think so.
Hmm. You do pour some sort of alcohol on top.
JP, is there alcohol in tiramisu? Oh, he's talking to Pat Nevin.
I have a feeling, you do.
It's fine, don't
you
worry about it.
The,
I think there is.
Some of it in alcohol,
there is,
yeah.
I think there is.
Anyway, the one thing we've learned is don't take us for nutritional.
No, I think it's become very clear. Lads, about the raw eggs, it's never ending, these texts. When I was a young lad, my mother thought I was run down. She brought me to the doctor and she recommended me to take raw egg mixed with half a bottle of Guinness every day. I was about 8 years old. It done me no harm, says Brian Brady and Cavan. Bullet coffee has raw egg, as does a Vietnamese coffee. It's whipped and very tasty, says Maureen. That's the final text.
Why would you volunteer to eat raw egg?
I don't know. Look, again, our advice is to the 15-year-old amateur sports person, just cook the egg.
Well, you see, if you're out and about, you can just have your eggs in your backpack. Whip them in, shake it all around.
Yeah.
Bit of protein. Probably, would you have a protein shake with raw egg in it?
Oh, God.
Ugh, be congealed or ugh.
Dave McIntyre is a good man on the golf course to whip out a boiled egg in its shell and to eat it, which is a nice thing.
I do like it. I you know, every so often when you go through these health kicks, I'd make my boiled eggs in the morning and bring them into work, and it is very satisfying.
Mm.
Though it makes an almighty mess if you haven't taken the shell off.
Mm. Pat Nevin, hello.
Have I tuned into the wrong show?
It's an FA Cup Monday, so we're struggling a bit.
Yeah, I was watching Bournemouth try to play football there as well, and I can see why you go on to eggs. Yes,
well,
I get it.
A mother texted us in because her 15-year-old is insisting on having raw eggs, wants to get the protein in, has clearly seen Rocky, and the 15-year-old's mother was wondering, is this safe? Can I let my 15-year-old have raw eggs? And I don't know, in her deluded state, she thought asking us would be a good idea. Did Pat Nevin like to crack a few eggs raw in the morning and knock them back?
I have tried it. And I hated it, so I stopped doing it. Simple answer.
Yeah.
There was, I don't know how much it made a kind of fuss in Ireland a few years back when Edwina Curry, who was a minister in the Conservative government, started saying that sort of eggs weren't fully safe because there was some problem with some bacteria. But it's okay if you boiled them. So I'm just going to put everybody off taking them raw now because some can have some bacteria which you can cook off. I believe, but that was Edwina Curry, not me. So blame her, not me. When you mix it with various things, you mix it with, I think it's orange juice and things like that, bam with you. Boil it. It's fine. But just as good.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. So anyway, were you militant about your diet in general terms back in the 80s and 90s when it was still obviously the old boys club and you could do what you want?
That's actually a good question because I was tutored in it quite early. You know, when everyone else was just having, you know, rubbish, you know, maybe a steak if you were really up and into it. But I was in Scotland Squad really early. And because I was in Scotland Squad so early, we had dietitians and nutritionists who were involved in that. Now, it was really early days of that sort of stuff. So I had it in my mind. So I think I was probably 19 and I stopped having things like chips and things like that because, you know, it wasn't good for you. You have pastas, etc. instead. However, my big problem was putting on weight. I had to eat so much and people hated me for that because I'd go to dinner and I'd have a starter, two main courses and a big pudding. And it kind of still wasn't enough. I still couldn't put on weight. But I loved trying to. It was great fun. The devastating nightmare was when I stopped playing, I couldn't do it anymore. But your body's ready for all that food again. So I could have been Jabba the Hutt very, very quickly. So in actual fact, my diet got a million times better when I stopped playing football, weirdly. It's just, sometimes it's, everyone tells you what the exact things you should eat. It's learning what's good for your body is the thing. And lots of people say, I mean, up until very recently, I lived on nuts and cereal bars and, you know, all those sort of things. I had a slight illness. I came back and they said, don't do potatoes, do chips. And I went, what? They said, don't do bread with seeds in it, do white bread. And I thought, I've had brown bread. So it's what's good for your body at the time.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I think we've all kind of experimented with foods in different ways and you figure out certain things agree with you and everything. You still look in great shape now. You look like a man who's keeping fit now.
Yeah, I run all the time. I was running this morning. I'll have a run tomorrow morning as well. I've got a couple of days at home, which is unusual for me. I've been basically following Leicester City around the country for the last wee while, which is a bit strange and a bit weird. It's just the way that the games are falling for me. But I was fanatical about it as a kid. I mean, my second sport was distance running. So I kind of loved it anyway, so I could run all day. So when I turned up my first professional clubs and they go for this, like, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 mile run, it's just a mile jog for me. I'm just flying along. So it was really, really easy for me. It helps if you are light and are kind of small, etc. But just the joy and the love of actually running. And so that's what I still do it. I'm still hill run all the time. And it's not because I'm really dedicated. It's just I happen to like it. When some people love it, some people don't.
Finds it hard to put on weight, loves running.
All the more remarkable he's in such good shape considering he spends half his life at Stamford Bridge and the greatest feast known to man in that press room. Dear God.
Okay, still eating the stuff there. No, the food is really good there. I mean, that is a serious topic. Man City, have you been to Man City recently?
Yes.
They've gone downhill a bit, haven't they? They were the best by miles, but they've gone downhill a bit.
They shut the free bar.
Right, shall we even start on Arsenal? How good is it at Arsenal?
Ah, no, Chelsea is miles ahead of all of them. The prawns. That's when you know you've made it.
Is that why you're belching sometimes when I say hello to you at the start?
And then you have to go up to the gantry straight after that, climb about 400 steps. Whew, it's a tough life.
Tell us about Leicester then. I kind of caught a little bit of the Brentford game and they were 1-0 up at that stage, so the sense of jeopardy had kind of gone. I didn't stick with it till the end. How are they doing at the moment?
Well, I watched them. First of all, I went to see them against West Ham. West Ham were awful beyond belief. Felt a bit sorry for David Moyes because he tried a different system. It stunk, and then he changed it, and it was okay for 10 minutes, and then they stunk again for the rest of the game. Leicester are just lovely to watch. And when they've got their full team out, when they played their kind of almost the reserve team against Brentford, and they were pretty good as well, but, you know, the first team is just get different players in so many different positions that you can cause you problems. Now, everyone will be talking about Vardy just now because he's had that glute injury that he got during that West Ham game. But all the way through the rest of the team, you know, the likes of Barnes was brilliant. Barnes was absolutely phenomenal. I had no idea how quick he was. Until you see him in the flesh, you don't realise it. He is stormingly quick. It has to be said, I noticed it when he was running against Zapaleta, so maybe that should kind of calm me down slightly in that one. But he was absolutely fantastic on the day. But you look all the way through that team, and there's different players like Madsons and all that, that can change the game in a heartbeat. So, and also, you look through that team, and they've got so many different players in every position. It's a brilliantly balanced squad they've got. I mean, everywhere, if you lose any player in that team, I don't think there's one. You talk about, you know, that midfield area, they've got Ndidi who plays in there. You know, they've got a variety of players, but they brought Choudhury in the other day, and he was brilliant. You know, so every single player has got a perfect player to replace him if needed, and a few of them are quite adaptable as well. I mean, they're a really nice team to watch. They play good football, and they're well adapted. So I'm not, when you watch them a few times in a row, you start to realise, actually, I don't know what their best team is, but then again, Brendan doesn't, and then again, I don't think anyone is. And I don't actually think it matters a great deal, because they get really decent quality in every single position.
Pat, when Brendan Rodgers took over at Leicester 11 months ago, one of the question marks was about a clash of styles, potentially, that Leicester City, traditionally over the last few years, loved to play a counter-attacking style of football that got the best out of Jamie Vardy, whereas Brendan Rodgers, with what we've seen, loved a possession-based style of football. How's that developed and worked out over the last 11 months? Is it a case now that they can do both ways, or does he still like that sort of death by football that he used to talk about almost 10 years ago?
No, you've nailed it. It's both, and it's adaptable. And there are some games I've watched them play. Actually, during that Brentford game, they did both. For one part of the game, they did this, keep the ball, press high, you know, a joy to watch, almost like Liverpool. Fantastic. And then second half, they just played in the break. They just left Iheanacho up in his own and sat right back and played storming, breaking football. I don't know how much of that was deliberate, how much that was getting pushed back by Brentford. But when you've actually now got those, you know, those two very obvious methods, plus a couple of hybrids in there as well, I think that's the reason why they have been quite successful. I watched them at Chelsea earlier in the season, and it was intriguing because at that time, I don't think we realised that they had come on quite so well. And on that occasion, they were under massive pressure for the first half, but then they broke out of it, and then they were the better possession side for a while. They've got Chelsea this weekend. I'm going to Leicester for that one again because I'm trolling them. But I think it'll be a brilliant game because the two teams that have that willingness to go and play an open football, but they can both actually play in the break as well. Should be a really good game, that one, and really tough one to call.
If the last 20 years have marked the terminal, probably, decline of the FA Cup, we can now say it's bookended by Manchester United going to Brazil and Jurgen Klopp going on his holidays and not being around for the replay. So he's going to leave Neil Critchley to prepare the team and take the game against Shrewsbury. I mean, I totally get the players going on holiday and them giving the players a break. That's obvious. But Jurgen Klopp's also going on a holiday and he ain't missing it to come back for the Shrewsbury game, and he's getting lots of criticism. I'm not trying to tempt you into Pat Nevin slams Jurgen Klopp, but I am a bit surprised he's not breaking off his holiday for a day or two to come back.
I think I know why, and I'm kind of okay with it. He missed one previous game, didn't he? Because they had to go and play in that World Club Championship thing. Mm-hmm. And they left him in charge for that game, and you know they did the business, and they won the game, and that's fine. And he said, oh, well done. You done that. Well, do it again. And it's, inverted commas, only Shrewsbury as well. And it's at home. And I just think he's saying, look, you've done a good job. I'm just going to leave it for you. I think it's good enough. Now, classically in the situation, if they win the game and they get through, everybody's happy. If you don't win and this fantastic long, great run comes to an end, then he gets a bit of abuse. But in the final analysis, FA Cup, Liverpool, does it matter? Answer, nah, not really. They can say it matters right now. But in reality, what have they got in the next round when they get through? They've got Chelsea waiting for them. Chelsea have put out a really strong side in that game. They don't need that just now. The games they've got just now is absolutely mental. They've got a game on Wednesday, haven't they?
Tuesday.
Yeah, Wednesday. So, I mean, it's non-stop. It's non-stop for them. And I think he did say when the World Club Championship happened and all the other games around it, he was just shouting and bawling and saying, this is too much. Well, in the midst of it all, looking at it, he's absolutely right. There's too many games for them. It's kind of ridiculous. And I don't know about you, and I don't know about anyone who's listening. See, trying to find out who's playing who in what competition tonight or tomorrow night or yesterday is bizarre. Now, this whole January thing has been bizarre because you turn on a game and then I have to go, you know, online to find out what competition it is sometimes because it's all over the place. And I kind of see where they're coming from.
Yeah, that's got ridiculous. Like, you look at Watford last week. They played Premier League on Tuesday, an FA Cup replay on Thursday. And if they'd won that, they would have been playing Manchester United yesterday. Mm. It's totally unfair. But whatever about Jurgen Klopp resting players, Pat, and he's perfectly entitled to, and he probably would have, regardless of winter break or not. Like, is he not just throwing his toys out of the pram a little bit by saying he's not going to turn up? Like, you're the manager of the football club. You go to the game. Is that not just part of the gig? And is it not insulting to the players he leaves behind that the manager isn't even bothering to show up to watch them?
He'll have checked it with the board. If the board were okay with it, he'll be fine with it as well. He may well say to them, hey, this is a lot of stress. This is a lot of pressure. And, you know, a break for the players and a break for me is a good thing as well. As long as they agree with that, it's fine. The players that are going to play in that game, the players that are left behind, they're not going to be first-team players. They're not going to be guys that are saying, where is he? Where is he? You know, I'm here every week, you know, playing every week, and then he's swanned off. It's not going to be like that. It's not going to be a bunch of players that are playing every single week that's going to play against Shrewsbury. So that won't be the reaction you get for any of the players. No chance. I promise you, no chance. You might get one or two fans, but I doubt it because they absolutely love him anyway. And he'll have checked it with the board. So you can make that argument, and people outside might be angry with that and might say that thing, and other people in the game might say it. Bet you don't see it coming for Liverpool. I absolutely bet you don't see it coming for Liverpool. Because there's no way. They just will not think that way.
Yeah. I wonder, though, they won't get many chances to do the treble. Would be a nice way to crown off the year. That's been very greedy. But genuinely, I mean, will Liverpool ever have a better chance to do the treble?
Well, anybody. You know, it's really hard. You know, it's a few teams have done it in England over the years. Looking at it, this is the one they'll kind of try and tickle along. You know, obviously they'll go for they've got the league just about sewn up. Obviously Champions League, the one they're going to push for as much as possible, so they'll think about them. They will juggle both of them, and it's like they'll have the other one kind of there. They have the FA Cup there, and they'll try and tickle their way through it without taking any chances in anybody. I don't think if they get back to Shrewsbury and then they go and play Chelsea, I don't think you'll see the whole squad out there against Chelsea. They'll try and put enough out there that might just win them the game in a good day. Like the game they did against Everton, you know, might be just enough. Mm. And it's one of those ones where you might just tiptoe your way through to an FA Cup final. But the worst thing you can possibly do in that situation is try and win all three and make a mess of two of them because you were trying too hard. And so they will do it with the Champions League. They won't do it with the FA Cup. I can't see it. I've not done it so far. If they get to the final of the FA Cup, they'll go for that. Sure. Don't worry about that. But I can't see them trying it otherwise. Because I've watched too many teams in the past do it. You know, trying too many fronts and they'll get something, but sometimes you get nothing because they're trying too many fronts.
Nathan and I were just chatting before you came on when we weren't talking about eggs. And we were talking about the Man City game against Fulham. And there were periods in that game where Fulham kick out, they would do, you know, the tried and tested centre-half split, full-backs push on. And literally against a Manchester City full press, they were passing to their centre-halves on the end line. And Manchester City were routinely picking them off and winning possession back in and around the Fulham penalty area. Now, on occasion, Fulham absolutely did beat the press, so it wasn't a complete fool's errand. But it was very, very dangerous and it definitely backfired plenty of times. And speaking of 2 points, one, it is just staggering the extent to which English football has changed, that it's permeated that deeply into Championship level and that they'll still do it in an FA Cup tie against a Manchester City type team. But also, like, there is a bit of groupthink about this that doesn't sit well with me. You know, this just did not seem like the right approach. I mean, I'm sure Scott Parker wants to show everyone he's a progressive manager, but there was just a point where you can scoff at Sam Allardyce sitting in a studio in the Middle East saying, well, they just need to get rid of it. Like, there are times when you just need to get rid of it.
Yeah. Right, so here's the argument. Manchester City didn't do it very well to start with when they started, but they kept on doing it, and they kept on doing it, and they won. And it was a success. And if you look around, who's winning leagues, who's winning Champions Leagues, who's winning Cups, it's the teams that are doing that. And because they learn how to do it, and they don't do it kind of now and again when they fancy it, it's got... They drum it in. They might take a year, it might take 2 years. And that's the thinking. So that's the concept, right? That they're capable of doing that. If you do it, oh, but we're under a wee bit of pressure, so we're going to lump it now. that's not it. You're not learning it. You have to accept. Now, I'm with you, because there are just some players that ain't good enough to do it and never will be. And see, asking guys like that to do it, that's the bit that gets me. That's the bit that I actually get upset with the managers when they do that. And sometimes it's centre-backs, more often it's goalies. And they're saying, yeah, you need to pass it for the back and do this and do that. And then they give the ball away and they lose a goal and everyone points at the keeper. And I'm saying, I'm not pointing at the keeper, I'm pointing at the gaffer. Ask him to do that when he's capable, when he's learned enough, when he's comfortable enough on the ball. And so my difficulty was different from yourself. It's not about not trying to do it. It's don't ask people to do it that in the end are never going to be capable of doing it. And I agree with you. There's some people out there against quick players. They're just not going to have quick enough thinking, quick enough feet, or have the visualization to be able to do it. And the thing is, it's not just me seeing that. Every player on the pitch can see it. Everybody knows. And again, this isn't new stuff. This is old magic. I've said to you before, olden days, it was called, give it to the centre-half, he'll give us it back. And whether he lumps it away, you close him down. So it's just a pushing on of what is a very, very old idea. But I agree with you. Don't ask guys to do it. They can't do it.
Yeah, I was just going to ask on that, because obviously Fulham, if they do get promoted next year, you would expect it would be one of the weaker teams in the Premier League again. And have you seen teams come up, like maybe Wolves are an exception because of the investment they made, but like next season they're not going to have a huge amount of the ball. Does it make any sense to be preparing for a Premier League season by playing that style, by trying to play out from the back, when you go up to the top flight, like you're going to be facing, well, maybe not Manchester City every week, but a far higher calibre of opponent? Like, it just seems though you're almost asking for trouble.
Yeah, so what you do then is you think, okay, what is our game plan? It's not going to be that. Our style is something else. Now, let's take it to the extreme other end of it. Okay, we're going to be a Sam Allardyce type team, right? And we're going to lump it. Well, you better get rid of half of your players because they don't play like that or not very, very good at playing that. The ones that get up, if they get up playing that more robust, direct style, that's absolutely fine. That's absolutely cool. But don't come up as a footballing team and then try to become robust and one-dimensional and one-touch move kind of team, because you'll be rubbish at it. That's a skill in itself. That's something you need to learn. And you need specific types of players to be able to do that. So, you know, it's going to be tough for them, anyone who comes up to do that, because you haven't got A, the investment, or B, the data to do a money ball and get the best players around the world who can come in and actually do that. So it's a really tough call. Whatever way you do it, it's a wee bit of a catch-22. You need to be intelligent, and maybe instead of copying Man City or copying the old style, you have to have a new kind of idea of your own. And I give you Sheffield United, who've kind of done a version of it. And it's pretty good, and it's kind of working, and it's making people think for a little while. I'm not convinced it's going to last, you know, more than a season, but at least they've come up with new ideas. And you're absolutely, the one thing I hate, and I love you using that phrase, groupthink. It's my least thing in least favourite thing in football just now, is the groupthink that we all see. And you can see it, and lots of fans can see it. And your call might be, oh, they're all playing for the back, they're playing through the keeper, or whatever. Everyone does it. My downer is the usage of language just now. I mean, can we ban the use of the phrase low block, please, right now?
Good luck with that.
And a whole bunch of other ones, which don't mean anything other than I could explain it to you much more simple in layman's terms, right? So there is loads and loads of groupthink out there. But the clever ones and the ones that do succeed have actually got either a modern idea or a new take on a current idea.
There's a text in from Colin which I can't not read out. My granduncle flew B-17 bombings in World War II. They used to take off with milk churns full of milk, egg powder and sugar mixed together in their missions. They'd fly to the Ruhr, they'd fly over the target, drop a few tons of bombs, and when they got back, the altitude had frozen the mix and they would get stuck into lashings of ice cream after the mission. There you go, there's a food text now. There was one thing I wanted to ask you. So Man United beat Fulham 4-0 and they made light work. Man City beat Fulham. United beat Tranmere 6-0, I meant to say. And they made light work of it. Phil Jones even scored, you know. He's had a tough time, so I was kind of happy to see that. But I wanted to ask you, as a winger in particular and a dribbler, the pitch was horrific. So you would have played in an era where there were lots of bad pitches. On the face of it, it would be obvious enough to think that a perfectly flat pitch makes dribbling much, much easier. And I'm sure that's probably the truth. I wanted to ask you though, were there occasions where you were in such a flow and the ball was bobbling in front of you that you almost had a Jedi-esque sense of the bobbles and the beats of the pitch and that actually it could end up confusing the defender more because it was even harder for him to predict what the hell was going on? Or is that just nonsensical?
I think it's a really good question. I'd love to say yes, I did, but the only guy I ever saw doing it was Maradona. Maradona seemed to be able to do it. I mean, I used to slow down some of his plays, and it's as if he worked with the bobbles. And I've never seen any, anyone apart from him do it.
Okay.
No one. So my better plan would have been, look, get out wide where the grass is still there and it's a wee bit flatter. You say I played in pitches like Tranmere's. I played in Tranmere's pitch for five years.
Going, sorry, of course. Sorry. You literally played in pitches like Tranmere's, yes.
Played in that pitch for 5 years. And that's the thing. You, it's an interesting thing. It isn't easier. It is because the ball travels, it's smooth and it goes along and it will go exactly where you put it. It isn't easier with the modern ones because if you go and try and turn on it, you will fall because it's too hard. It's rock hard. So you have to slalom instead of, you know, twist. So you can't do some of the things that you could do in the old style pitches. But then if you had to choose between the two, it would be through grated teeth I'd probably pick the modern pitch. But slightly through grated teeth, because what you actually, and I should put some teeth in actually, what you actually really need is something of a hybrid between the two. Something's got a little bit of give, a little bit of lushness about it, but also it's got the hard wearing. And unfortunately, try as I did with various agronomists to get that kind of pitch. They accepted it was possible, but said they wouldn't do it because it was too much hassle for them. Okay. Which annoyed me quite a bit.
Because I was at one of these things with listeners of the show, Liverpool fans at Anfield a couple of years ago, and was stunned at how hard the pitch was. It was like it was akin to playing on concrete. It was that hard.
And theirs were the first and the worst. Liverpool was the first and the worst who did it. So you go to Anfield, and of course you're playing against them, and this is a long time ago. This is late 80s. They put a rock hard, very, very close-cut pitch. It was very, very flat, but they were a brilliant passing team. And it was all about zip, pass, move. And they were fantastic at it. And they had a pitch that completely suited the style, and it was absolutely brilliant. I didn't like that actual pitch unless it was battering down with rain, and that made it a little bit more give on it. Yeah. But they were the first who did it. And then when it became clear that some of the, sort of the newer pitches that we're bringing in now, what they were doing is becoming very hard-wearing, look absolutely brown, look great in the cameras, but they are basically concrete, painted green. Well, the cameras loved them, the television companies loved them, and the players, well, you'll just have to adapt. And, you know, it suited some players, didn't suit other players, you know. So, you know, those sort of pitches, oddly, the kind of twisting and turning winger would have been replaced much more by the slaloming Ronaldo. That's the type of player. And the great dribbler, maybe you could think of Liverpool in that era, was McManaman. But remember, he was a slalom dribbler, a slalom mover. Because you go and try the other style, or a more extreme style, you'd almost find it almost impossible a lot of time to do it in the most modern, hard-wearing pitches. I don't like them, and I've played them quite a lot recently. It just, still to this day, you have to adapt your game to them. But, you know, the game's always adapted, and you need to accept.
Okay, very interesting. Pat, thanks so much.
Pleasure. I'll go back and fall asleep in front of the Arsenal game if it's not.
Oh yeah, do you want to sum it up in 30 seconds? It's still 2-0. Bournemouth 0, Arsenal 2. What's this game?
I think Eddie Howe came up before the game and went to his players. Good idea not to go through here tonight, lads. Because we need to get ourselves fit for the league. So kind of put half an effort in, and Arsenal were popping it about as if they were like Barcelona of a different period. We're not fooled by that in the slightest. This is an awful Bournemouth performance. So we'll find out more as the weeks go by if Arsenal have suddenly found a great run under Arteta.
Yeah, Bournemouth got a little bit better, I think, while Pat's been on air, and I've had a couple of chances, but it's been carnage for Arsenal at the second half. So they've lost Mustafi to what looks like broken ankle or ankle ligaments. Bellerin got smashed in the ribs. We've just had a bad clash of heads with Socrates. So you'd think that that will put some real pressure on them to get a centre half. I know they're trying to get this guy from Flamengo, and it was on, it's off. It's going to be an interesting week because there's all sorts of stories in the paper today that Aubameyang could go between now and Friday to Barcelona because it's either now or the summer. So it's sort of stop-start it feels for Mikel Arteta.
Mm. Nathan, dare I say, that is why you don't play all those players in the FA Cup. Mm. they're knackered now.
Yeah.
If they miss all three of them, they're in big trouble. So, well, they were in, not trouble, but they were having a stinker of a season anyway. They can't afford to lose anyone. So,
yeah.
But they'll be doing lots of work in the transfer window. And to be honest, the transfer window this time actually may be more interesting than it's been for quite some time because there's a lot of panic-stricken clubs out there. And transfer windows are always good when clubs are panicking.
We'll let you get back to the couch. Thanks very much.
See you later, guys.
Pat and there.
Do you want to say hi to the Airsport viewers there at home?
No. Give me traditional sugar-coated jam donuts any day of the week. Taxi man from the airport, drum condra, pull in, bosh, straight into the Thunder's selection of jam donuts and, you know, the big French fancy, not the typical standard French.
Yeah, I know what you're saying,
talking,
yeah.
I'm talking gigantic portions.
You're happy with your pizza?
Yeah. So, was that chili, Kev?
There's a bit of chili on your pizza, Kenny. Yeah.
Apart from the chili,
Kenny doesn't like it too spicy.
The environment, the ambiance is not right. We've got to get back up to Gimney's again.
Where is Billy Ricky?
If you get to Billy Ricky High Street, do it right, and you're literally there. I'm going to throw in the Serengeti, and I don't know exactly where it was, possibly an outfit. Heard of Wildebeest, yeah? So as I'm driving, suddenly me seat is reclining backwards. Gaz is reclining the seat, like pinning me back, you know, pulling me back slowly, almost like in a vertical position, staring up the sunroof at the stars.
This is an all-time low.
Had to put the brakes on, throw him out of the car. It was ridiculous.
And he can't keep humiliating Kevin like this in the studio.
Just a little... come on, there's...
No need to argue anymore. That's a great song. That's a great album.
What secondary school did Brian attend?
Private.
Didn't ship you out today. Didn't ship you to the south side for a better education. Me and you are finished. Have you jumped on a bus and went down the coast road and out to the south of Dublin for an education?
Come on.
I don't know. I'll just go with Clontarf. This is awful stuff. This is desperate. Turn this thing off.
Well, Max, still 2-0 Arsenal against Bournemouth. The Texters are in flying form this evening, Nathan. Edwina Curry. She had an affair with John Major when he was Prime Minister, so clearly suspect judgment.
Allegedly.
No, she revealed that in her autobiography. Oh. Which I'm sure John Major and everyone was thrilled
about.
Yes.
Thanks for that.
Lads, I was in Mountjoy, worked in the kitchen, had to sneak out a dozen eggs every evening for two lads on the landing. They drank 6 white eggs every evening, suited me as they had my back when needed.
Why were they taking the 6 white eggs in the evening?
I guess they were just hungry and wanted more food. And I don't know. Who knows?
Right. What else was he supplying them with? Like, it starts with eggs. Where does it end?
It's a gateway. So, Kevin Kilbane. He has made it through to another week. Last week, Kev was in the dance-off.
Mm.
So this week, we fully expected, I would think, that Kev would be in the dance-off.
I think Kev was preparing himself for the end.
Yeah. And what's more is he did his routine and he got lower marks this week than last week. He did Should I Stay or Should I Go, that song, and they felt it wasn't punchy enough. His routine wasn't in keeping with the song. It was a bit too soft and gentle. And so he was then relying on support from the public to combine with the judges' score so that he would avoid the dance-off, skate-off, whatever. And he managed to, he's capturing the imagination of the British public. Because they obviously voted for him in greater numbers than the previous week.
Yeah.
He avoided the dance-off. Now, the key point is Nathan Murphy was in the crowd. We have an eyewitness account of the Dancing on Ice experience. First, though, Kevin Kilbane on OTBAN this morning says he has got a secret weapon in his bid for Dancing on Ice glory. Not Brianne. No, one Nathan Murphy.
I've been getting technical analysis off Nathan Murphy in the bar till probably midnight last night, telling me exactly what I should be doing next week, what track I should be going to, what moves I should be pulling off, how I should be impressing the judges. So Nathan's given me all last night, so we've got it sorted what we're going to do.
What colour are your fingernails next week, Kev?
That was actually when I got back in last night as well. So yeah, there you go. Yeah, there you go, Jay. Have you got anything to say?
A good night. A good night.
It was good. It was a good night. We had a really good night. Nathan was on the red wine. The red wine was flowing with him. He was letting himself down a little bit. He was starstruck in the room. He was going around Mora, getting photographs. and then, he was chatting to John Barrowman. He was giving John Barrowman a bit of stick as well in the bar after the game.
Dead right. So how does Nathan Murphy approach Mora Higgins for a selfie then?
She was floating around. She's good crack, so she came over for a bit of a chat with the lads. So I had a couple of friends over as well. So Nathan and his wife Debbie were there. So Nathan was all over. Nathan was purely starstruck. Honest to God, he was.
In the middle there, you can see his beard. And look, what's that? He's wrapped. He's literally wrapped in the Mayo flag.
Oh yeah, the Mayo flag's been out in force. So yeah, he was desperate to get it out all night. Anyway, we had a photograph down by the ice. But he didn't let it loose from his arms all evening.
Dear, oh dear. During that, Nathan just excitedly showed me a picture of him on his phone with Mora Higgins.
Fact.
It sounds like you've had the weekend of your life.
What a great day. It was brilliant.
Oh dear.
Now, I didn't go up pestering Mora Higgins. It was a small sort of backstage area with just family and friends. And she was right there.
Yes, but she wanted
she's
to go,
Irish, I'm Irish.
She wanted to go there to be with her family and friends. To be away from the pesterers.
No, but she was perfectly happy to come over and have a chat. She had no choice, obviously, but...
Yeah.
And all the Love Island lads were there. She was desperate to get away from them, I'd say.
I'd say she's sick of them, yeah.
Bloody hell.
So is it I mean, obviously you're there for Kev and it's great fun and you get to go backstage, it's kind of cool. And I think your wife is a big fan of the
big,
show.
Watched it for years.
Okay, so that encouraged...
She was very excited to see Philip Schofield and Holly Willoughby.
There's been some bad stories about Philip Schofield lately. Sorry, not that bad. That like he's a bit of a diva around the set of the morning show.
Right, yeah.
Like Amanda Holden's been having a right go at
right.
him, saying like he's not nasty.
I didn't
character.
See any of that there.
You didn't see any tension.
No, he was just
Holly.
Professional.
Okay.
You know, but Holly steals the show.
Did you talk to?
He's very skinny.
Holly? Very small. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Did you talk to him or Holly?
No, that was the big disappointment.
Right.
The big disappointment. But I spoke to Barman. I gave Barman both barrels.
Whew.
Because he's been giving Kev a hard time. It's just unacceptable. So I just thought, screw it. And he was well able to take it.
Yeah.
Oof. It was getting, the language was getting fruity at times. It was a back and forth.
Get John Barman on the show.
Absolutely. Torvald, and also, so Torvald Dean did a dance. First time all series.
Judges on the show, we should say.
Judges on the show.
Not everyone listening.
Legends.
Not everyone listening right now may have seen the show.
They don't know that Torvald Dean, but they, like, they don't really dance together that often. So they came out beforehand and one take, they're a bit worried.
Are they
that
a couple?
It might take. No, they're married separately. I'm 99% sure of that because every time I watch it, I say to my wife, are they a couple? She's like, no. So they're married separately. But obviously spent a lot of time together.
A lot of time together.
Lot of time together. So that was good because they were very... The standard is unbelievable.
Yes.
Like, even Kevin, who, you know, is trying his best.
Mm.
Like, from where he started, which was literally nothing, to be able to skate away and dance on national TV. And Perry, that lad is just ridiculous. Now it is, like, should be thrown out straight away. The whole thing is a sham.
Go on.
Professional dancer.
Yeah.
And not just any old professional dancer in this insane dance group.
Yeah.
One of which is also a judge. And apparently he used to play ice hockey.
Oh, for God's sake.
Like, that's just unfair.
Is this a hard ticket to get,
thankfully,
by the way?
So thankfully, I didn't see him at midnight.
Okay, because you went out of the interviews
there. Yeah.
Is this a hard ticket to get? Like, is everybody there just connected with the people there?
No, there's a good... I think everybody gets six or seven.
Okay, so is it like... you were there...
Stacey Solomon was there with Joe Schwash.
Oh, yeah, they're a couple.
Mm.
So you were there, you got the backstage stuff, you got to pester Mora Higgins, all that. If you're not a friend to the celebs like you, if you just go along as a punter, is it a good experience or does it feel like you're just there for 10 hours?
Oh, I'd say if you're just a punter, because we landed out, and this place is in the back arse of beyond outside of London.
Yeah.
We land in, it's lashing rain. Mm. I mean, tearing down. And there's a queue of about 300-400 people. I'm thinking, uh-oh, going to get saturated. Get out of the taxi. Girl comes over. Sorry, are you here with someone? Or I was like, yeah, with Kev. Come this way. Skip past everybody.
Typical.
Straight in. Couple of drinks, in, relax, while they, and you get the best seats. You're with the lads from Love Island.
I saw.
So.
Word is you went up and said, do you know who I am, to the woman on the door and then. Oh, we gotta go. Ad break.
Save me from myself.
2-1 Arsenal, back in 1 sec, we'll tell you about the Bournemouth Cup.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as celebrating a home draw.
Now, welcome back. So we are pretty much out of time. 8 minutes of added time gone between Bournemouth 1, Arsenal 2. We would presume Arsenal will just hang on and see that out. Richie will let you know just after 10 o'clock news. Don't forget our daily sports breakfast show back tomorrow, 7:30. The Go Loud app is where you can get that. Jaron Owen will have Michael Verney to talk about the weekend's hurling. Gizzy Ling as well will be talking in studio about how sport and the environment intersect. Tomorrow night in studio, Nathan Murphy will be with James McLean. So catch that interview, that should be good. Mm. And there'll be an Ireland 15, Six Nations 15 to chew over as well. Tom Dunn is on the way, of course. Nathan, we covered it all tonight.
We got there. We heard eggs, it. Dancing, yeah, a little bit of sport.
All the big stories. So we'll talk to you tomorrow. Good night.
Give him a ball and he out of grass. He'll give you a move with a perfect pass. Give him a ball and he out of space. He'll give you a move with godly grace. Ra-ta-ta-ta.